Our next case is 2015-1478, the State of Ohio versus Cameron D. Williams. For the appellant, Mr. Bender.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, my name is Alan Vender. I'm here on behalf of Cameron Williams. At this time, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Ohio statute says that when offenses are allied, there can be no more than one conviction on the allied offenses. So the issue before this court is when that statutory mandate is not followed, does that result in a sentence that is void ab initio are merely voidable and subject to res judicata if it is not raised on direct appeal. Now, this court has held that the error, multiple sentences on allied offenses, is not authorized by law. And this court has also held that when a trial court ignores a mandatory sentencing provision and gives a sentence that is not authorized by law, then the sentence is void. So this court should answer the question and find that multiple convictions on allied offenses are void. Most sentencing errors will be merely voidable. That includes constitutional errors, and notably, it includes the initial determination of whether offenses are, in fact, allied.
Now, they merged the sentences, did they not?
That's correct.
There was no distinction in what the ultimate sentence was. If the trial court would have dismissed the counts and or merged the counts for sentencing, correct? He was only sentenced on one.
He was sentenced on all three.
Well, but he was only, the sentences were merged.
They were run concurrently.
Yes.
So he received three concurrent sentences on the allied offenses.
Which did not increase what he would have received had the court done it in the way that you say was required by statute.
That is correct.
So there's no harm to your client.
Well, this court, in Underwood, this court said that having more convictions than are authorized by law is prejudicial, even when they're run concurrently, and even when there is no extra time. Having too many convictions.
Was this objected to at sentencing?
It was not.
So to get relief, we have to find it's void because it's just voidable.
That's correct.
Your client's done. Right, no recourse.
That's correct.
And the recourse that you're seeking here is to go back and be resentenced, presumably to the same amount of time, right?
Correct.
And the reason is that it's going to be harmful to his pristine record when he gets out if he has all three of these.
It is because he has too many convictions,
yeah,
more than are authorized by law. Is the harm.
Make it harder for him to get a job.
Could be.
So your position, counsel, I'm over here, your position is there can be only one conviction. We're not talking about merging for sentencing, correct?
That's correct. The relevant statute says that when there are allied offenses, there can be only one conviction on the allied offenses. So we're here today because the determination had been made that they were allied offenses and he still received multiple convictions. If this were an objection to the finding, maybe they should have been allied, but they weren't allied, then we wouldn't be here today. But because they were found to be allied,
because to follow Justice Pfeiffer, in fact, they did merge at sentencing. He got one sentence, correct?
He received three concurrent sentences.
But they're all the same.
the length of time is the same.
Gotcha. Isn't part of our problem, what about the Whitfield case where this court said that a conviction is a finding of guilt plus a sentence? So the two are, you have to have both. You have to have both the finding and the sentence before you have a conviction, which is different than a lot of states would look at a conviction, say that's a finding of guilt only, and then you have the sentence. We have had several cases that go either way. Some cases we say a conviction is a finding of guilt, but Whitfield says the two are together, and Whitfield was talking about the allied offense statute, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what? How does that impact what we have here?
Well, there was a finding of guilt and a concurrent sentence here. So there, and I would again cite to Underwood because it was the error is essentially this indistinguishable from the error that this court looked at in Underwood. And in Underwood, the court had to look at, because of the statute regarding jointly recommended sentences, the court had to determine if it was authorized by law, but it was the same error. It was multiple allied sentences that were run concurrently. And that is found to be the requisite finding of guilt and sentence, even though it is concurrent.
So you're really relying on precedent of this court and all of its voidable problems that we've had in the past. Just to continue on, you would have to win this case. Is that what you're saying? I mean, you should win this case if we follow precedent. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct.
Well, counsel, I'm wondering, you know, the public defender's office is a very busy place, and we see a lot of pro se appeals, so that means to me you don't take all the cases.
That's correct.
So here your client, you win or you lose, his jail time is going to be the same either way. So why'd you bring this to us? So Justice Lanzinger can write about void and voidable one more time? Or what's the reason that you're here?
But there is a split among the districts, and it is not clear because appellate courts have been vocal in asking this court to look at this issue. Because appellate courts are reluctant to say that, like the court below was reluctant, it said we don't want to say anything is void without clear guidance from.
That's what the Ninth District said in rejecting the Eighth District's treatment. Correct.
That's correct.
Okay, so correct me procedurally here. This was not objected to at sentencing. It was not. Appealed on direct appeal. And your client was sentenced when? 2007, 2008?
Yes.
Okay, so here we are, 2016, and res judicata does not apply, correct? That's your position?
That's correct.
Okay, and that's based on Whitfield?
It's based on Underwood, and then
Underwood
it's based on this. Underwood tells us that it's not authorized by law, and then this court's jurisprudence going back decades says when a trial court ignores a statutory mandate, and here the mandate is that there be no more than one conviction on allied offenses. When a statutory mandate is ignored, so other examples.
So it's contrary to law. That's what you're saying. This is a sentence that is contrary to law.
It is unauthorized by law is the key. And it's similar to when there's a statutory mandate that says there must be a driver's license suspension. If that's not followed, it results in a void sentence. Or there must be a prison sentence. If that's not followed.
Well, the merger is not optional.
That's
right?
Correct.
Okay, so if a judge doesn't merge it prior to sentencing, it's contrary to law.
That's correct.
Okay.
It is, and Underwood addressed the error and found it to be both contrary to and unauthorized by law.
And all of this started with the post-release control cases where, in a situation where the state did not object at the time, and there was an appeal later on after the 30 days, we ended up accepting the argument that those were void sentences that could be corrected any time. Is that correct?
The post-release control cases are certainly relevant in the voidness jurisprudence, but it goes back decades. State v. Beasley in the 80s, if there's a mandatory prison sentence and that's not, and the trial court does not impose that, the trial court has ignored the statutory
because
mandate.
We said in those cases the court was without jurisdiction to act. So we're talking about something that goes back to this creating a super right to appeal and then calling it a void sentence to allow for the 30 days to pass and the court to still act on it.
You can characterize it that way.
Yeah, she has.
Believe
majority,
me, she
a
has.
Majority of us don't. I'm wondering if we shouldn't just rule from the bench on this and be done with it.
Well, I would ask that because Mr.
Isn't there a motion to correct the record in the case?
Are you speaking about the motion that was that's being appealed today?
The matter that Judge Croce had?
I'm not sure about all of the, I will admit, I'm not sure of all the procedural history of this case. There have been a number of motions filed.
All right.
And unless there are further questions from the court, I would
Is this something that could be done clerically?
It is not, Your Honor, because it was not done correctly at sentencing. So a nunk-pro-tunk could only reflect what happened at sentencing.
The court made a determination, however, on the record
that
these were allied offenses of similar import. And did it make all of the findings in the allied offense statute?
I believe it did.
And pardon me, please?
I believe it did, yes. It made all the necessary findings.
Well, if all of the findings were made and the court's journal entry was not in conformity, can it not simply go back and correct its own record as a clerical mistake that the court made?
Well, at sentencing, I would say no, because at sentencing, the trial court sentenced him to multiple concurrent sentences on the allied offenses.
After it had made the determination that they were allied offenses.
That's correct.
So we have an inconsistent ruling with a jurist who is no longer on the bench.
Well, I believe that the sentencing entry and what happened in court were the same in the sense that there was a finding that they were allied offenses, but then there were three concurrent sentences when the statute says the defendant can only be convicted of one. So that's the error. But both at sentencing and in the journal entry, the error happened, and this court said...
Well, that was a common error that we've sort of worked through. This doesn't happen as much more in more recent vintage. Am I right?
I do not believe this is a common error, no.
Thank you.
Counsel, I guess I'm reading from the Court of Appeals decision, though. You haven't yet convinced me that we have a brand new case here. I think I'm joining Justice Piper. But the Ninth District is saying because he could have raised the arguments, did not raise the arguments, he's barred.
That's correct. He definitely didn't raise the arguments, but if it is a void sentence, then res judicata will not preclude him from raising it in the future because it is void ab initio. And that's the distinction. And that's why this is a new case, is because this has not been determined whether the parties agree there's an error here, but the question is it an error that will be barred by res judicata if it's not raised on the direct appeal, or is it void, therefore raisable at any time? And that's the dispute. The courts of appeals have certified a conflict. The first district has a judge has dissented and asked this court to resolve this question also, because courts of appeals, again, are reluctant.
Counsel, do you think truly that we haven't resolved this unequivocally already?
I do not believe it's been resolved in the context of is it void or voidable. I believe it's resolved that it's unauthorized by law, but courts of appeals need the guidance to know that it is void, and it is because it's unauthorized by law and in violation of statutory mandate, it is void and not
what
subject to.
What takes this case out of the garden variety cases that have been decided after we've done our series of cases on void and voidable? We said the sentence is contrary to law, that it's void, and you get a do-over. And here this has been going on for 10 years, and the fact that it's res judicata should not impact
our decision here, because we've said previously it's not subject to res judicata. If it was void to begin with, it is a flawed sentence, and you can raise it any time. That's the law. Would you agree?
Correct.
Okay, so because the Ninth District might have gotten it wrong here, you're asking for error correction.
Well, I respectfully know, Your Honor, because the issue of is this error void or voidable has not quite been addressed.
Is what error?
Multiple sentences on allied offenses when statute mandates there can only be one. And courts of
appeals. So you want us to label that void, and then the next steps will flow from that determination. That's what you're asking here.
Correct.
So there is disagreement on whether when a trial court sentences a defendant on was something that is mandatorily merged, okay, three convictions that are mandatorily, or three findings of guilt that are mandatorily merged for the purpose of sentencing. When that is done, you need us to say that's void.
That's correct. That issue needs to be
clarified. That's never been decided before.
That's not by this court. That's
okay,
correct.
Thanks.
Counsel, wait a minute before you leave. The chief's got my attention now. This is a court of appeals. We can modify a sentence, can we not? Why couldn't we just affirm one sentence for 69 years to life and reverse the other two sentences?
The procedure for allied offenses errors is laid out in State v. Wilson, this court's decision, and it says that the trial court should resentence him.
No, I understand, but this is the Supreme Court of Ohio, and why can't we just come down and say the Court of Appeals was wrong, trial court was wrong, here's the right sentence?
Well, I certainly wouldn't tell the Supreme Court of Ohio what it can't do, but I believe that the decision in Wilson should control the resentencing procedure.
Gotcha.
You don't think the determination on whether they are allied offenses needs to be revisited, do you?
I do not.
The only thing you want to do is have the same sentence imposed or have the prosecutor elect at the time of sentencing which one of the three convictions should be sentenced.
That's correct.
And you ultimately would expect your client, as you answered Justice Pfeiffer, will get the very same sentence that he has already.
Most likely.
So he's okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, my name is Richard Cassay, representing the state of Ohio in this case. In reading Mr. Vender's merit brief, it seemed to me that his argument was that a trial court can create a void sentence through its thought or its intent. Now, what I mean by that is, in this case, the trial court found that, well, of course they're allied. One victim, you can't have three homicide convictions. Trial court finding they are allied, at that point in time, pre-Whitfield, pre-Dameron, the trial court did what I'm sure many other trial courts have done. It imposed concurrent sentences, because when you get right down to it, what's the practical harm? There isn't any.
Well, counsel, I guess that's why we're here today. I'm over here. That's why we're here today. Wasn't the trial court required at that juncture to say there's going to be one conviction and we're going to proceed to sentencing?
The trial court made an error. I'm not here to tell you that it didn't. The trial court, what we know now should have happened is the trial court should have sentenced on one of the aggravated murders, 30 to life, one of the gun specs.
I don't want to invite you somewhere you don't want to go, but
was
the trial court authorized by law to do what they did?
No.
Did the Court of Appeals then stand up and say, this is a contrary to law opinion, we got to reverse this?
This issue has been raised by Mr. Williams subsequent to the direct appeal on three occasions, and the Ninth District has, to date, not done what Mr. Vendor wants them to do.
Right.
Now.
Well, counsel, at the time of sentencing, did the prosecutor designate which of the allied offenses he or she selected for sentencing?
No.
But they do have the right to do that.
Yes, under Whitfield, no doubt. That's the law.
Okay. But you're saying that doesn't matter here.
No, I'm not saying it doesn't matter, Your Honor. I'm saying under the jurisprudence as it exists today under Whitfield, that's what would happen. But prior to Whitfield, not every trial court had divined the correct way to proceed. So this is what the trial court did.
We have a sentence that is contrary to law back in 2008, 2007, whenever this occurred, correct?
It's contrary to law, correct.
All right. And didn't we say in subsequent cases that when a sentence is contrary to law, that can be remedied on appeal at any time, and the 30 days right to appeal, direct appeal, does not control?
If this court has said that as an overarching principle applicable to any sentencing error whatsoever.
No. Not any sentencing error.
Contrary to law.
It's contrary to law.
The cases that I'm aware of concerning allied offense jurisprudence are Underwood, the basic cases, Underwood, Rogers, and Holdcroft. Holdcroft tangentially, but I think Holdcroft is very relevant here. I agree with Mr. Vendor. This court has never said that in this factual situation, that is a void sentence. What this court
has— Do you agree that we need to pronounce that, and then whichever way we decide on that question will dictate what the subsequent responsibilities are of either the appellate or the trial court, if any?
That is the certified question that this court accepted, okay. Yes. And depending on the court's ruling, Mr. Williams will be sentenced to 30 to life plus three, or he'll be sentenced
to 30 to life plus three. Well, once again, counsel, I'm inviting you where you don't want to be then. Are you agreeing it's a void sentence?
No, not at all.
Not a void sentence.
It's not. Because.
Why not?
Mr. Cassay, the idea of void and contrary to law, can you think of any error that's not contrary to law? I mean, the problem is, originally we said a void sentence was when a court acted without jurisdiction.
Correct.
And, you know, that was a limited area where it was void. A voidable sentence was to be corrected within the 30-day appeal period. Right. And now, by saying any time a sentence is contrary to law or unauthorized by law or whatever we say, we're opening it up to say that res judicata doesn't mean anything, that all of these sentences that may be incorrect because they're unauthorized by law or contrary to law can be corrected at any time.
Any reversible error is contrary to law. I don't care what it is. It is any error that a court of appeals is going to reverse and remand on, you name it, that's contrary to law.
Why is this not a void sentence, Mr. Cassay? You said it wasn't.
It wasn't. All right. From the public defender's standpoint, they appear to be saying because the trial court found that they were allied offenses and imposed concurrent sentences, that makes it void. In distinction to sentences that arguably may be on allied offenses or not. That, to me, is a distinction that can't be made. The Eighth District in Holmes picked up on this. Many courts, including this one, involving alleged errors in the merger of allied offenses are voidable and not void. And they term that the determination stage. That's the language from Holdcroft. The determination whether or not offenses are allied is subject to res judicata.
But counsel, once the decision has been made by the trial court that they are allied, the trial court doesn't have any authority to do anything else, do they? Once they've made the determination.
Once they made the determination, well, this trial court here made the determination.
That's why I asked the question.
And imposed a remedy that was acceptable at that point in time.
To whom?
To Mr. Cameron Williams, who'd never objected at the sentencing or on appeal. He had no problem with it. But my point is, there's no such thing really as a simple determination, arguably, that offenses are allied or not, because that's meaningless. There has to be a conviction, the finding of guilt, and the sentence before you can even start talking about whether or not that error has to be raised on direct appeal, or whether or not it can be raised 10 or 20 or 30 years later. So, because the trial court knew or thought that these were allied offenses, that is not any different from a trial court thinking about it and imposing a sentence, multiple sentences, when it did not believe that there were allied offenses. If it's wrong, it's wrong. This one isn't more wrong than this one.
This isn't wrong.
It's,
is it? Let's talk about the merger. His language, the judge's language at the time of sentencing, finding of guilty on these various counts, finding that they are allied offenses, and therefore need to be merged.
Yes.
Okay. Then proceeding to sentence on each one of the counts to which the defendant was found guilty.
Yes.
All right. And then, I guess in essence, saying, now I'm going to merge the sentences, have them run concurrently. The sentences were run concurrently?
Correct, Your Honor.
All right. So you've got, in essence, the same result, but the path that was taken by the judge was later determined to be incorrect by subsequent case law.
That's correct.
Okay. And you're saying that we should not be able to retroactively go back to a case such as this with its procedural history and declare it unauthorized by law. This what the judge did at the time of sentencing.
Again, I'm not here to say that the trial court in 2008 did not commit an error. It was a plain error. This court said in Underwood, paragraph 31, sentences on allied offenses, whether consecutive or concurrent, is plain error. But that doesn't answer the question. Is it voidable or is it void? The point I'm trying to make is, it doesn't matter what the trial court's intent is. The trial court is going to impose a sentence after a finding of guilt resulting in the conviction.
Mr. Cassay, what do you think the outcome of this case should be?
Affirm the Ninth District. This is not...
And what's the basis for the affirming the Ninth District here?
It's not... The sentence here is not void. It's voidable only. That is a short answer to the certified question.
If a judge did the exact same thing tomorrow...
Yes.
And 30 days passed, and it was not appealed.
Not appealed.
Okay. And then there was, it's brought to the appellate court. What do you think their position should be, void or voidable?
Well, okay, after 30 days, if they file a petition for post-conviction relief, timely, because we have a year.
Right.
If res judicata applies, then it applies. If it's not raised on direct appeal.
So the fact that this was done prior to all of the case law being promulgated on this topic
subsequent to the sentencing in Williams doesn't enter into your thought process here?
I would say if it happened tomorrow, it's
still voidable, not void.
Yes, it's voidable, and it is wrong today as it was back in 2008.
Okay, all right. I wanted to be sure that you weren't saying the development of the law subsequent to the trial court sentencing here had something to do with this application.
It's still multiple sentences on allied offenses. So I'm sure there's cases, you know, predating 2008 saying that a trial court can't do that. But with respect, that's not the issue in this.
But counsel, if we follow your logic, if a trial court tomorrow is authorized by law to sentence someone to 10 years in prison, and they're having a cranky day and they say 100 years, and it goes down, that's contrary to law, correct?
Yes.
The defendant goes off and he does his 30 days in prison, and about 3 years later he meets a guy, he says, 100 years strikes me as being kind of long.
That
race judicata? I mean, he's missed his appeal date.
I want to thank you, Justice O'Neill, for that question, because I was trying to think, what is a truly void sentence?
Jurisdiction.
Subject matter jurisdiction, jurisdiction over the person, and the way I would think of it, an impossible sentence. It doesn't have to be 100 years.
Make
it 12.
Okay.
Make it 12. That's impossible. That is a truly void sentence.
If we went back to the lack of jurisdiction to define void, would that clear up a lot of the confusion on these issues for the courts of appeals?
Well, yes, because you have, so to speak, a bright line rule. You have the precedent. I don't think anybody would say those should be overruled, but going forward, if it is possible, every court of appeals in this state, I am sure, would appreciate a bright line rule. But I don't know if this is the vehicle for that or not. But to answer your question, it's an impossible sentence because nowhere in the statute is 12 years or 100 years authorized for a felony, any type of felony. 6 years mandatory post-release control. Nowhere in the statute is anybody going to find 6 years mandatory post-release control.
I'm sorry, I don't have the statute in front of me. Does the merger statute have that pesky word shall in it?
2941.25. I don't know that it has shall in it.
Okay.
I wouldn't bet my life on it, but I don't believe it.
I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me.
So what we have, Mr. Cassay, is a trial judge who determines that the three counts of murder should merge because there's only one victim.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And errantly signs a journal entry after he finds that these are allied offenses of similar import, mm-hmm. and errantly signs a journal entry and imposes concurrent sentences,
yes, Your Honor.
Instead of imposing only one sentence and dismissing the other two. And after 8 years, there is no relief now for Mr. Williams, in your view.
In my view, correct.
That's it. So he will be convicted of three counts, not one.
Correct.
And there's no remedy for him anywhere in our system. Is that your view?
That's my view under the jurisprudence of this court. And I'm running out of time. I want to talk briefly about State versus Rogers, if I can. What Rogers says to me is the trial court doesn't even have a duty to inquire whether or not offenses are allied. Now, I think that's a little bit contradictory to Underwood, but that appears to be what Rogers says. If the trial court doesn't have a duty to inquire, and if that means nobody else raised the issue either, then on appeal, it has to be plain error. If that sentence, and again, whether or not, whatever, regardless of the trial court's intent, If a sentence is imposed, if a conviction is imposed, and it happens to be on an allied offense, one is as wrong as the other. It doesn't matter what the trial court thinks. The trial court did it. No trial court is going to do something that they think is wrong. So if that sentence is imposed and they're on allied offenses, the defendant has to demonstrate plain error on appeal. To me, that means that sentence cannot be void. Why put the burden on a defendant to demonstrate plain error when you're dealing with a void sentence? I don't think you can do that. So I think Rogers is relevant here. Now again, Mr. Vendor distinguishes Rogers with this, well, arguably allied or arguably not. But again, once that sentence is imposed, one error is as bad as the other.
Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Spinner, you've used all your time. You may take a minute.
I may, very briefly, I would just like to speak of the language of the statute. It says a defendant may be convicted of only one allied offense, is what the statute says. And in Underwood, this court identified that as a clear statutory mandate. And because that clear statutory mandate was not followed, Mr. Williams' sentence is not authorized by law. And I would ask that this court rule that it is void and reverse his conviction.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Marcia, will you call a recess?